Well, good afternoon. That looks like a pretty impressive title for a white paper that we put together. I see Lee's laughing already. But I did want to share with you, as Bob said, what happened and where we've gotten to this point today. And again, as Bob mentioned, why we have the paper that came out of this effort in our proceedings. Before the meeting last year in Houston, Bob is chair of this committee, as well as Mark Enns, chair of the Cowherd Efficiency Committee, had put their heads together and probably working with the BIF board had come up with the idea of building a task force and having that task force study the where we're headed, where we could be headed with the improvement of feed efficiency in our industry. We have a lot of measurement of feed intake that's gotten started, a lot of different ways to try and evaluate, measure, and describe efficiency of feed production. So there was a lot of impetus, I think, to try and get a little better focus as we go forward. So the ad hoc committee that was asked to get together involved Dr. Jack Deckers at Iowa State University. Jack works primarily in the swine breeding area, but has a lot of work with feed intake, feed efficiency as well, because he leads a major selection project at Iowa State on feed intake, feed efficiency with pigs. Dr. Tom Rathje, with a swine breeding company that has measured lots of feed intake and puts emphasis on feed utilization in their selection program in pigs with Danbred North America. So Tom and Jack were the two non-traditional BIF type of members that were brought in to add a little more diversity, do a little more thought from the standpoint of an industry that's worked a little harder and involved use of feed intake improvement efficiency more than we have in beef cattle so far. Dr. Denny Cruz from Colorado State University was a third member on our team. Denny has a history of working in the feed intake and back in the days when he was in Canada, as well as more recent years as been a faculty member at Colorado State. And then Dr. Mike McNeil, with the USDA Fort Keogh for many, many years, established a wonderful research record there, and not only working with activity at the fort, but also with several breed associations, and he continues to do that today. He retired about a year and a half ago and started his own company, which is Delta G, and so we're very lucky to have Mike involved as well with his history of work in feed intake. And then Bob, as chair of this committee and desiring to see us get something done in the feed intake area, and Mark Enns, or the other members along with myself, in planning that session that we had down in Houston last year on the first afternoon, as well as helping us get a paper prepared and ready for publication. Well, after we had our session with talks given by six of us of that list down at Houston last year, then the next step was to develop the paper, get to writing, and put down thoughts so we'd have a permanent record to read from. And we worked on that through last summer and early part of September. We presented to the Beef Improvement Federation Board the paper that's in the your proceedings that you have a copy of on the fly strike of the proceedings. And then the board authorized that we should go ahead and try and publish that in an academic journal, a scientific journal. And the journal that was chosen is Professional Animal Scientist. The Professional Animal Scientist has a little more applied bent or applied audience, reaches many of our folks in extension more directly than maybe through something like Journal of Animal Science. So we submitted that manuscript, got it formatted correctly. You have to dot the I's a little differently, cross the T's differently, get in different journals. And we did that submission in the early part of this year. We've gotten that reviewed and back, had a few corrections to make, and we've resubmitted that just 10 days ago or so. And hopefully that will be accepted. I'm optimistic. I've been through this publishing game for 40 years, and you kind of know when you're done and when you're still got a ways to go yet, but I think we've got this one in pretty good shape right now. So hopefully it'll be accepted. So we think it'll be out in Professional Animal Scientists a few months from now. And then the other places, again, it's in our proceedings that we all have a copy of right now. We'll also want to get it up on the USDA NIFA grant or AFRA grant on CAP grant on feed efficiency that's led out of the University of Missouri, but has several collaborators across many institutions, including Bob and Matt Spangler at my institution. We'll get that on that NIFA grant web page as well. So, how can I summarize down all the stuff that you'll, if you go to read that 10-page single-space paper, how can we squeeze it down a little bit into half a dozen slides or so for us today? I want to do that in the next several minutes that we'll spend together today. Part of the intent of the paper is to realize why improving efficiency of output relative to input is important for the entire industry, and that would be all aspects of wherever we're pouring feed into producing beef from cow-calf production through feedlot production. And we did some comparing at the very first part of that paper on just what feed efficiency is of product output relative to the feed input in comparing broiler production with pork production to beef production. And as you might guess, we're way down the list on that, mainly because of the very low reproductive rate that we have, how we cover the overhead feed costs of reproducing females compared to those of growing animals. But just because we are poorer from a beef standpoint than what pork production is or broiler production, chicken production is, why it doesn't mean we shouldn't try and continue to improve, because I guarantee you that pork production and broiler production breeding companies are busy at it as well right now trying to make improvements in feed efficiency. We're just lucky that beef continues to taste better, my very biased opinion. Beef continues to taste much better than what pork or poultry does, and that beef cattle use that tremendous resource that we have spread across this beautiful country of grass and or browsing plants like they talked about this morning as well. So how can we go about improving efficiency? Well, 2 points I have toward the bottom of this slide are we can make improvements in efficiency of feed utilization in beef production without measuring feed. If we get more output through better reproduction, or in some cases a little faster growth, that will improve feed efficiency without ever having to measure feed, which is a high-cost, sophisticated measurement. But we can also make gains in efficiency by reducing the denominator, the input side, so reducing actual feed intake, but maybe not changing the output side of the numerator of that ratio for efficiency. And that's where we really need to measure feed in order to make improvements. So some discussion in that paper of how we set ourselves up to attack both of those. Some of the questions that are brought up in the paper help us understand some research areas and some work areas where we need a little more knowledge yet. And that are what are very various opportunities that we could make improvement. And we tried to answer some of these as well as just post them as questions. Didn't get them all answered, though. What are the potential antagonisms between measures of feed efficiency or improvement of feed efficiency with other characteristics of our cattle? What data collections are needed, and how are we going to do the predictions of breeding value so that we have selection tools in the future through national cattle evaluation? So discussion of that topic area, and then all these lead toward what are the holes in knowledge, what are other things that we don't know yet. And for our younger folks that we have in the audience, there's still plenty of things that we don't know, and we'll have a strong need for new folks to continue doing research and application in this area. This is one big take-home message for all of us today, and that's that we did not and do not advocate any single measure of efficiency. We have several things that we can work with that help us indicate efficiency, but rather we see improvement in efficiency by measurements of used feed as part of selection indexes, where we combine both that intake side, the feed intake part, as well as the output side measures. So putting those together into an index that linearizes things is much wiser than trying to do things as a ratio. So you do not see in this white paper any feed efficiency predictor or EPD as a genetic predictor. One of the interesting parts of doing this paper and working with two colleagues that work in the swine breeding area, and especially one, Tom Ratz, who works with a company that's actively including measures of feed intake in their selection program, as well as some time that I spent visiting with folks working in the broiler breeding industry. And I was lucky enough that I was on a poultry breeding program last spring, so built some relationships there to keep me current of what's happening in broiler breeding. And that is, surprisingly, both in broiler breeding, in their selection measurement selection programs, as well as in the swine breeding programs, they make heavy use of the ratio of feed to gain. That's the opposite of the efficiency measure as a ratio, but given the some of the weaknesses that come in, or statistical weaknesses and difficulties that come in with working with ratios, they are still the measure of choice that have gone into broiler breeding selection programs, as well as into the dam bred swine breeding program. So that's one place they've been different than what we would advocate, what we would design to be used in our beef programs. Poultry breeding and swine breeding use much shorter periods of feed intake measurement. Would not be the least bit surprising with poultry breeding, just because with birds reaching market weights in 5.5 to 6 weeks, or less, why they just don't have anywhere near the amount of time that we look at when we think of 70, 80 day feed intake measurements that look quite effective in growing cattle. One of the reasons that inclusion of feed measurement and improvement of feed efficiency programs in swine breeding as well as poultry breeding has been so effectively and so quickly or more easily incorporated is just the vertical integration of the industries. With three or four poultry breeding companies and four or five swine breeding companies that do such a large proportion of the breeding stock, the breeding and development for the total industries, makes it so much easier for them to go down a path and get the technology incorporated very quickly, very effectively. And when it comes to feed intake measurement, it is quite expensive on a per animal basis to get that used most efficiently. Even though cows eat a lot of the feed energy resources in annual total life cycle production, more than half of cows, measurement of feed intake as a selection tool is going to happen with growing animals that are on a ration that has more concentrate in, less forage is in. We just have the ability to measure. We've got the animals dry lotted already. We have emerging and has emerged the technology to measure it there, whereas we don't have the methods of technology to measure forage intake on cows that are mostly eating grass all their life. So we are going to be forced to use growing animal intakes and feed intake unless the day comes and we can measure forage intake much more easily, much more efficiently, effectively than what we can right now. So then there, one of those possible questions that I alluded to earlier is, what's the relationship between feed intake requirements, energy requirements for maintenance, growth, and so on, for animals on high concentrate or diets as compared to a high forage or grazing animal type of diet. And the evidence so far is that does not look to be a major question, major problem, but it's still one that needs to be researched further. We have projects going on around the country, a large one at the Meat Animal Research Center, pointed at that, answering that type of question. So this is something we need to continue to learn. And again, those younger scientists in the room will have plenty of things to continue to work on. As we looked at how we incorporate into a national cattle evaluation program, why it's easy to realize that feed intake is an economically relevant trait. We clearly have costs in feed. It's our largest cost, our major cost in feed production. So it is an economically relevant trait. Therefore, it should be part of what we consider when we're making selection decisions and include it in selection indexes. Because different parts of the country and different feeding systems will have different diets, different times of year, different types of systems that feed intake data would be collected on growing animals, we see a clear need to try and standardize those in some way. And rather than trying to dictate to everybody a certain energy density of ration and a certain time of year, length of time, etc., or numbers of animals per pen or anything like that, rather what we see being used is a technique that Mike Neal has proposed, and that's one of standardizing the data within contemporary groups. By standardizing data, it means we take individual records and subtract the mean and divide by the standard deviation. So you end up with averages of zero and standard deviation of, as a measure of the variability within the group, having a nice, easy value to work with of one. If we have data that are standardized and then work with that in our analyses and come up with APD values, etc. on that, we can always take those standardized values and convert them back to a specific diet with specific costs for that particular diet. So the nice thing about it is we can work with the analysis on a standardized basis. We can take those and reflect feed costs for unique, specific production situations. One of the things that becomes important as we make predictions is to make use of correlated traits wherever possible, because we are not set up yet to measure feed intake on lots of animals in all breeding stock production situations, all seed stock production situations. Why? Using correlated traits, other characteristics that are more routinely measured, like weights and gains, and fatnesses and amounts, making use of those as part of the prediction of a breeding value or EPD, we think has very high merit. Again, I'll refer back to a colleague and one of the authors on the paper, Mike Nealis. Mike worked with American Ag Association a few years ago and has a paper in Journal of Science 2011, talks about a prototype selection program. Well, he makes use of the indicator traits of growth and fatness along with feed intake to predict breeding value. So animals that do not have feed intake have the indicator traits on them, and it helps in the total prediction situation. So use of correlated traits will be an important part of a national cattle evaluation along with direct measurement of feed intake. And then with increasing data coming in and predictive ability with broader panels and more phenotypes that have been measured, using genomic data will become increasingly important. We already have predictions of breeding value for feed intake from some of the genomic data providers, and we see that as another area to be expanded to help again with the accuracy of prediction. And that summarizes the 10-page paper down to about 25 minutes of presentation. So at this point, thank you for your time, and I'm sure someone has a question or a comment, or unless you're ready to go to the next person.
Questions, great.
Okay.
Plenty of time.